Let's begin with salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-Ali al-Azim. Welcome to class number 2 of Principles of Islamic Family Building. We're going to begin with a recitation from the Quran, and Brother Salman has kindly volunteer to grace us with the recitation.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا إما يبلغن عندك الكبر أحدهما أو كلاهما فلا تقل لهما أف ولا تنهرهما وقل لهما قولا كريما وأخفض لهما جناح الذل من الرحمة وقل رب ارحمهما كما ربياني صغيرا اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
Hassan, thank you so much. تقبل الله. So welcome to all of you who are joining us today, and welcome to our online viewers and those who will inshallah be watching this recorded session. So the ayahs that were just read, Allah Ta'ala says in translation, your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents. Should any of them or both reach old age at your side, do not say to them, fie, and do not chide them, but speak to them noble words, lower the wing of humility to them and mercifully, and say, my Lord, have mercy on them just as they reared me when I was a small child. You've all heard these ayahs before, and a lot of times when we look at these ayahs of the Quran, we look at it from the perspective of duties towards our parents. And of course, that's a very important way of looking at these ayahs. But today, inshallah, as part of the content for today's class, we're going to be looking at it from the perspective of what do these ayahs tell us in terms of duties as parents. So we're going to get to that, inshallah. In terms of the class agenda, so we request those of you who can make it in person to try to arrive a little bit early. Alhamdulillah, if you were here earlier to help out with the setup, because we just need help in terms of the tables and chairs and whatnot, microphone. And then we have a short Quran recitation, and then we have the presentation, and then we have Q&A, and then I'm still around after when the Q&A ends if anybody has like kind of one-on-one issues. For those of you who would like to take this course as a course, like you want to be enrolled in the class, you want to do the homework, you want to get access to the slides afterwards, you want to have the full experience of like being a student in the class, then highly recommend that you join the Google Classroom. If you haven't used Google Classroom before, it's pretty straightforward. You just go to this website, you type in the class code, and then you're there. You'll get the announcements, and then you'll have access to the homework. It will even send you an email reminder one day before saying that your homework is going to be due. And the video, the class recordings are available on the YouTube channel. For those of you who would like to just moderate, audit. Just you want to audit the class. You just want to be present and sort of just listen in. That's totally fine as well. You don't have to join the Google Classroom. You don't have to do the homework, but it's just something which inshallah will be beneficial to those of you who do the homework. It will make the material kind of settle in better, inshallah. Our dates and timings, so this is our second week, and we have 8 weeks total for this, for the first semester here. There's going to be course slides, there's homework. My request, especially of those who are able to make it in person, regular attendance, punctuality is highly desirable. It helps with the class and just the continuity. And, you know, there's obviously, especially in the post-pandemic world, there's a lot of different modalities for taking classes and for acquiring knowledge. But there's something very sacred and wholesome about the traditional method of seeking knowledge, which is in person, you know. And they have a saying in the Hausa, like, it is what it is, but basically it means, like, you know, when a teacher conveys and you get it from them directly, like, it just is a lot more meaningful. That's the gist of the saying. And you know, I don't consider myself as some great teacher or anything like that, but this is just part of the tradition. Like, I'm now trying to impart whatever it is that I one time, let's say, might have been able to learn from my teachers. And it's a very sacred, beautiful tradition. And I think that the experience is something which itself, it doesn't just measure into, like, okay, I know this thing. No, I experienced the occasion of learning. And inshallah, those of you who are able to complete all the homework for the course, you'll get a certificate, like a cert, and that will be something that you can, inshallah, be a way of completion. And in terms of childcare, we didn't get anybody coming up and volunteering and saying that I can do that. So if it is something that parents would like to have arranged, then definitely, like, if we can have a few people say that, okay, we're going to take on that responsibility of organizing, arranging it, then that's totally fine. Inshallah, I'm sure that other parents would benefit as well. But for now, we don't have childcare. Okay, so last week we talked about the importance of this class. It was an opportunity to really, like, kind of market it, say why it's important to take it. We also talked about how to approach Tarbiyah principles. I'm going to be summarizing what we talked about in just a bit. Today, our topic is Islamic Tarbiyah versus non-Islamic Tarbiyah and the parents' role in facilitating a Tarbiyah environment. And then these are some of the other topics that I'm hoping to be able to get to in this semester. And then I'm already making a list now of other topics that I'm gathering and talking to you all that you're interested in hearing about. So that's, you can see that I'm making, like, this sort of secondary list on the bottom there. So as I read your comments in your homework as well too, I'm taking note of that and inshallah putting that into the plan for the follow-up, which will happen after Muharram, inshallah. Okay, so about the homework now, mashallah, like, I was totally impressed by your responses on the homework. Many of you really, like, put in time thinking about it the whole week, it seems, and then, you know, you after pondering upon it, you discussed it with your spouses, those of you who are married, and then you're like, okay, well, this is what I came up with. And mashallah, it was really nice, and I'm still getting the homeworks being submitted, so I wasn't able to read all of them, but I will, inshallah, read all of them. And I learned by reading your reflections. So what I wanted to do for the first part here, for a few minutes, is just share some excerpts. I'm not mentioning any names. In some places where I thought somebody might be able to guess who it is, I even changed up the words here and there, you know, maybe changed the gender or made it gender neutral, whatever. Because I just wanted to, it's such wonderful comments. And if your comment is not, if your homework is not put up here, it doesn't mean that you didn't have wonderful things to say. Like, mashallah, everyone did. But I just picked kind of randomly, and I want to continue this next week because there were some that I really want to also include here. I just didn't get there wasn't enough room. So inshallah, next week I'm going to continue sharing with you some of the responses that you all came up with. So here was somebody who was talking about timeouts, and it seemed like a lot of people were remembering the timeouts, which as a parent, it's really important to think about that, you know, people who are now parents and they're thinking about it, their childhood, the one disciplinary technique that they found their parents using a lot was the timeout. And maybe that was like our parents' generation, like, go-to sort of technique for parenting. Maybe their generation before them was like, you know, taking up a stick or like using the hand or the belt or something. So it's like, okay, we're not going to do that, all right, but we're going to use the timeout. So a lot of you were like coming about the timeout. So this individual was like, sure, I mean, to summarize, you know, I remember them. I don't remember what I did to warrant them. So they did not effectively serve as a consequence. There were times that I didn't think I deserved it, but I couldn't even explain myself. And it didn't serve me well. Now, this is interesting. When someone needs time to process their feelings or take time to themselves during conflict, now that this person is an adult, my automatic reaction is that they are trying to punish me because that's how I was disciplined. So it's very interesting how it's sort of a gut reaction to other people sort of quieting down. Oh, they're mad at me, right? Which isn't necessarily the case, right? There are some, especially when we look at those introvert personalities, they do need time to just process. Like if they're always like socializing, like they'll actually get depressed, right? And it's nothing. There's no problem with it. They're not sick. They just need time to themselves to just like kind of, you know, ease back into like, you know, sanity. So, and some people are the opposite. They're like, you know, no, I always want to be around people, bubbly, all this stuff. You know, they never, you know, they don't understand what that means, you know. So then another major indicator is that my mom has apologized for how harsh she would discipline me and tell me to be gentler to my child because she learned it wasn't right. Okay, and then they infrequently yelled at me and never hit me, and that left a positive impression on me. So it was good that they didn't do that to me. Okay, another person, stories of the prophet. I love listening to stories. It was effective because I feel like I still owe a lot of the values that are near and dear to me because of those stories that my mom would tell during bedtimes, especially concerning Allah. It was effective also because I would ask my mother to repeat the stories. It was in a way that I wanted to hear it again and was absorbing and processing what is said. I saw this same behavior in my own children's development. The same person said in their response that, that I forgot to include this, that because Allah uses this in the Quran, then definitely it is an accepted tarbiyah technique. And they're exactly right, that we can take a cue from the way that Allah does tarbiyah in terms of how we should do tarbiyah. And I'm sure the parents here will agree with me that this is super effective, super useful way. Like sometimes child can be stubborn, refusing whatever, crying, and you can be like, well, let me tell you a story. And then suddenly it's like, whoa, you know, like everything is like, okay, what's the story? Right? And some people, like they have this fear. They're like, oh, I don't know how to tell stories. They're like, can you tell me the books? Can you give me all the texts and everything like that? Trust me, brothers and sisters, like as a parent, like Allah has given you something where you can come up with stories like on anything and everything. Like it's there, it's inside of you. Right? You just have to like let it happen and you will see yourself telling stories and suddenly you remember things about your childhood and you'll be like, I didn't even remember that thing before, but I have something to share with my kids about this thing and that thing. And the kids will be like, whoa, that's super interesting. They're like, oh really, and that and what that? And then they'll ask you about it. And then a year later they'll be like, oh, remember you told us a story about that thing and this thing. You know, and I'm sharing this based on experience because you know, in the schools that I got a chance to, I've been had a chance to work with usually like once a week, I try to share a story with like, especially the younger children. And mashallah, you know, like years later, they'll come up and like, oh, there was that thing and that story and everything. And they really can be a way of conveying things. So this is definitely a good thing. This person here was saying that when it comes to when their children act up, they say that mostly I yell a lot. So they're being honest, right? Mostly I yell. But when I have my wits about me, I'm able to employ the much richer, reasonable, and empathic response of just being with the child in their cry, whatever the reason is, and that is the most effective strategy. Let's think about it for a second. My child is expressing themselves emotionally. They've now had some type of overload. They need to get their emotions out. I get angry because of what they're doing. And a way of dealing with my anger is I take them and I make them a prisoner, right? Basically, I'm putting them in a jail cell, right? It can be on a chair, it can be in the corner, it can be in a room, right? So what am I teaching the child here? That whenever you have emotional needs, I'm not there for you. You have to take care of it yourself, right? Just figure it out. When you're okay, then come back to me. What do you guys think? Is that, you see any issue with that? Like, is it okay? what do you think? Any comments? Exactly. Like the time when they need their parents the most, right? It's like, no, you have to deal with it on your own. Right? And we're going to talk about this today, inshallah, that there's some parts of Allah's lordship that He performs through the agency of the parents. Okay, now that, and what we like, the goal of, like, what does Islam teach us? The goal of, like, success and happiness is in constantly being aware of the presence of this Lord who's, like, taking care of us, who is aware of our needs, who we can turn to in every circumstance. We can call to Him, you know, there's nothing that comes to us in terms of good, or nothing bad is deflected from us save through His channel. And now we're saying that representative is not going to be there for you when you need them. Right? So that they talk about, like, I mean, in Western psychology, they talk about, you know, rather than time outs, like time ins. You know, and this is what this parent is referring to here, that, like, okay, I'm just going to be there for you, right? Like, you know, I just want to know I'm there for you, right? And you know, what is, okay, so we talked about, like, the anger of the parent, right? So as a way, instead of striking the child, right, like, I'm going to put them in the timeout. But then the question is, well, why is the parent getting angry? Like, what exactly is the source of the anger? Like, what do you think, why is it the parents get angry when they're, and then they want to put their children in timeout? What is the thing that's triggering it? Yeah.
Because they can't help the situation.
Yeah.
They get frustrated.
Okay. Yeah.
They want a quick resolution.
Avoid the situation. Sometimes they're embarrassed, right? Because it's like other people are, like, watching them, right? Right? And what is it?
At a restaurant.
At a restaurant. Or at the grocery store or whatever, right? Like, or at Subway. So, but all these things, if you think about it, it's like, wait, is that really justified? Like, where's the anger coming? I'm like, what is it? Who am I angry at exactly for doing what, right? Like, what's going on here? You know, and it's like, these things are moments to, like, really do self-reflection. Like, what is the reason for my getting upset at this moment? And, you know, the truth of it is that sometimes it goes back to the parents not taking proper care of the child. They're pushing them too much, right? They're putting them in a situation where it's like asking them to throw a tantrum. Children, when, especially in those young years, right, we need to try to avoid putting in them in those extreme situations where they're going to have to, like, really stretch themselves. When they get older, then, of course, they develop that resiliency, that sabr, you know, that self-control, but not in those first 4 years, right? So these are the years where it's like you mitigate these type of, like, stressors, right? Calm, you know, take care of their food, take care of their sleep, whatever it is. Okay, but not of course, that can also be to the extreme as well, too, where then it's like, well, okay, if that's the case, I'm just going to stay home all the time, you know, and I'll just, no, you know, and I won't do anything. I won't participate in society at all, and I won't, like, go to any programs or meet anyone, or because I want to keep everything according to, like, no, there has to be obviously a certain balance to this. Okay, dinner, meals together, we'll do this one, and then the other ones we'll do, inshallah. Dinner, meals together, always. We more or less always ate together, so we got a chance to discuss, catch up with each other. Whenever my dad had an issue, he would discuss scenarios, options with us. Excellent. My mom would use a lecturing type of approach when we did something wrong or neglected to do something. I don't think this was effective because I remember really not liking it and tuning out. This is, like, for me, right? Because, like, obviously my tendency is like, okay, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, I'm gonna, like, let's talk about it, right? I don't plan to use this technique because it is ineffective and also in some ways harms the parent-child relationship. I might have to resort to it. I know my kids are listening to this too, you know, so they're probably like, after a time, though, because I'm sure there will be times when much information regarding a subject needs to be relayed. I hope that I'll be able to use a more interactive approach to the topic. Mashallah. The strategy was effective in making me fear misbehaving. This was about timeouts. But it also negatively affected my relationship with my parent and also affects my current relationships. If someone I love is quiet around me or doesn't respond right away because they didn't hear me, I immediately fear the worst. So now the child is being raised with a sense of fear with regard to the people that they love, that this person is going to, like, not be there for me, right? So this is another student sharing a very similar reflection, which is very eye-opening for me. I'm sure, inshallah, you guys are benefiting from this. There's many others that I will, inshallah, I'll share these next time, along with some others as well, too, that I'm going to get to in process, yeah.
So you mentioned
No, no, I'm saying that I have to be careful about this because obviously my natural tendency would be like, I mean, just because, you know, but when, I mean, in my capacity as a parent, like I remember one of the, and this is, I'm telling you this because, you know, you're a teacher, right? So, and other people here are like educators and maybe, I don't know, if we have some scholars, for example, I don't know, right? Or doctors, we have some medical professionals, right? So one of the advice I got from like one of my mentors, like he's a, like a senior scholar, really insightful. He said that when you're with your children, don't act like the scholar, like or whatever. You're a parent, you're a father, right? So do things in a different way at that time. And he was talking about, I mean, he was a father of, you know, three or four, and you know, he was hearing from his experience. So same thing, like, you know, there's time, like, you know, where we can be teachers, right? And we shouldn't be teachers, and okay. Like the teacher voice is not necessarily a good thing to use at home, right? Okay, so 5 points if we want to summarize the last class. Number one, what is tarbiyah? Tarbiyah is the process of preparing the grounds for the realization of someone's potential in order for them to reach their goal. Okay, it's a very beautiful way of looking at what's happening here. I'm not the grower. Allah is the grower. أَنْتُمْ تَزْرَعُونُهُ أَمْ نَحْنُ الزَّارِعُونَ Allah is the grower. Allah is the one who's doing the tarbiyah. I'm the one who's preparing the grounds. The Islamic principles of tarbiyah work as general principles and as part of a system. Sometimes one might not be effective in my particular situation. Sometimes I need to look at how I can pair this one with another one in order for this strategy to work. Number three, even though the principles are intuitive, applying them requires thought, careful consideration, discussion with one's spouse, persistence, monitoring, evaluation, and reminders. And mashallah, I saw this happening in the homework. You know, a number of you commented that like, this gave me a chance and I'm thinking about it now. I'm talking about it with my spouse. You know, I'm gonna change things here. I'm looking to like get feedback on this thing and that thing. And I think if nothing else comes out of these sessions, even if let's say you come to one session and this one thing happens and we start thinking about, you know, what we're doing and how we're doing it, alhamdulillah, that's the best type of learning. Number four, avoid being hasty in coming to conclusions about your parenting style. We might think that everything is smooth, everything is fine, but we have to remember that things happen in stages, and some seeds that are planted in this developmental stage might bear their fruit in the next developmental stage. And then the fifth one was raising children is seriously becoming more difficult, right? Like, and it's like the precision that we need to have when applying the techniques, the type of monitoring that we need to have, it's just a lot more, just given what we're facing. And we talked about some of those challenges last week. Okay, now, you know, there's a few more points about general tarbiyah, and then we're gonna launch in the topic. So Islamic principles versus non-Islamic strategies. We talked about like the approach of just Googling things or just taking things, hand-me-downs from parents or comparing notes with friends and saying, oh, because they're doing that, I'm gonna do this as well. And we give examples about the crying it out and whatever. So non-Islamic principles may be useful, but they are often aimed at another goal. And here's where I want to pose this question, because it's a good question to pose right at the beginning of our course here, which is that, what is your goal in raising your child? Like, really, what is your goal? You know, what will make you really happy? You know, one of the respected brothers, you know, he's told me a few times, he says that, like, if my daughter were to be proposed to by, you know, somebody who had like 5 PhDs, right, but didn't have taqwa, like I would, without hesitation, you know, reject that suitor. And if she were approached, her hand were, you know, proposed to by, you know, somebody who was just like the most menial of occupations, whatever, you know, he mentioned something, but I don't want to like put anything down. But that person had taqwa, like for me, I would gladly, you know, give her hand in marriage. And I understood from this, I mean, he wasn't just saying it, you know, he was like, he really meant it, and he actually demonstrated in his actions, right? And I realized, okay, this is somebody who, his value system is ordered in a certain way when it comes to family, and what is important, what's not important. You know, Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran, وَأَتُوا الْبُيُوتَ مِنْ أَبْوَابِهَا وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهِ When you enter a house, enter through the door. Okay, now there's the obvious meaning of that don't go through the back and like to invade somebody's privacy, go through the door. But scholars have also said that this is a general principle, that God, you know, he's the one who designed us in a way where we have a house and a door, right? So everything has a door to it. So when it comes to tarbiyah as well, what is that door? What is that pathway? This is what we're trying to find out. You know, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says that وَلَا أَعْتَمِدُ إِلَّا قَوْلَ. I trust nothing but God's word. Right? When it comes to the word of psychologist XYZ, who is evidence-based parenting, right? You hear about this a lot. You know, when you study, you know, how they make evidence, right? You realize that a lot of the evidence is very biased, right? And there's so much, you know, like there's so much to say about that. I don't want to get into it. But if it's coming from God, then I can trust it. Otherwise, I'm going to take it with a grain of salt. You know, a lot. This is a graphic that I came up with like some years ago that I just want to share. You know, if we talk typically, if we talk to people, especially, I mean, if people are being honest, they're like, what's really important for your child, right? They would talk about things like this, you know, being well-educated, money, accomplished, wealthy, happy, right? Do you guys agree? Like typical, right? I mean, if we take like an honest poll of whatever community we're in, I think they'd probably say these are the type of things that people are looking for. We want people to applaud them. But as we know, you know, from an Islamic perspective, these are things which are the zahir, the outer, but what about the batin, right? So when you go to what does Islam teach us, it says that, okay, well, you know, these are things which may or may not come your way, but what really matters is like these internal, like the taqwa, right? Inna akramakum indallahi atqakum, the aql, knowledge, husnul khulq, you know, responsibility, passionate, generous, charity, manners, respect, compassion, humility, modesty. Or, oh, and then here, you know, I wanted to pitch, to portray this in a graphical form. So I said that like, what really matters, like what is it that makes up identity is like being an Abdullah, you know, an Abd of Allah. And that applies to like this dimension right here. This is important, but it's this dimension here that really is, you know, what we're going to leave this world with. These things are going to drop off the side. And another way of looking at it is that, you know, as followers of the Ahlul Bayt, what really matters to us, all this is summarized in what? It's summarized in Imam Ali alayhi salam, Sayyidah Fatima, you know, Rasulullah, Imam Hassan. That's what it means, right? I mean, you can talk about all these things and all you want until you run out of breath, but you won't be able to explain them in any, it's just a drop in the ocean if you just say, okay, well, I show you it in person, right? Here you go. Here's the example, the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. So the Ahlul Bayt say that, وَالْحَقُّ مَا رَضَيْتُمُ وَالْبَاطِلُ مَا أَكْرَحْتُمُ, I believe. Goodness is what you command towards. Evil is that which you prohibit. So that's really like when we're, like from the Islamic perspective, it's like, you know, the goal has been given to you, right? So then therefore the principles we apply are also going to make a difference. So I'll just share with you something. Just a couple days ago, somebody shared with me a book, and it was a good book about bullying. Okay, and it's like this girl, you know, she's new to her school, and she tries to be nice to everyone, and then there's one girl she's nice to, but consistently she's like mean to her. Right, so initially she's like taking the approach of like patience, whatever, being quiet, and then after a while it's like, it's too much. So she's being bullied. Right, so she gets help from her teacher. And the teacher helps to resolve the situation, and she asks the trusted adult to show her the way. Very important topic, you know. Very important to teach our kids that this is not the type of patience that Allah asks us to have. Like where, you know, we're being, let's say, used as a doormat, and you know, we're not doing anything about it, right? No, I mean, there's steps that we need to take. Especially like this type of thing can crush somebody's dignity and then lead to like severe consequences. So this is not okay. But when you go on, then she says that, okay, she stands up for herself and how she wants to be treated and does so respectfully. She doesn't get heated. Okay, good. With boundaries in place, healthy friendships can grow. You'll have fun and feel safe with your heart all aglow. I think I missed a page, but anyway, that's the gist of it. Okay, mashallah, good. Okay. Now what's the key word here, right? If you zoom in and you say, okay, where are they relying on modern psychology? Which word do you think it is that they're talking about this from? Boundaries, right? And you go to the next page, and then they start talking about boundaries for the educators. Like a boundary is a limit Setting a boundary shows that you love and care for yourself and how others treat you. Okay? Now, if we don't think about it, we're like, okay, good, I'm going to teach my child this and we're set. But what do you think? What is it that's, we could make a comment about this particular thing right here? Where is it lacking?
How do you know what boundaries?
Oh, you know what? Also, Asrullah, so if you could do me a favor and also monitor the YouTube live chat in case the people, because there was a request last time to just monitor that. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Who's setting the boundary? Who's setting the boundary? Right? We could take this and I could go to my parents and say that, like, okay, mom, dad, you know, like, dad, you know, I don't like the way you hug me, right? Okay, that's my boundary, right? Or I don't like, I mean, you know, it's like, where does it stop, right? Like, I mean, and then who's making it and on what, like, basis? And there's, it could, it's a whole discussion, I mean, it's a whole philosophy here, which is that I'm the center of determining the boundaries and the roles and responsibilities. Now, from a religious perspective, right, a human being has dignity, but that dignity is given to them by God. There's boundaries which we can't violate where it becomes injustice, but that standard of justice is something which comes from the system that God has put into place. And there are relationships which are not, like, equal in the sense that there's, you know, there has to be, like, a lot of giving and a lot of, like, just, you know, like, especially when it comes to one's parents, for example. With believers, there's a special relationship as well. And when we explain to these things, you know, through, for example, the treatise of rights of Imam Sajjad, alayhi salam, then it's like the children start to see that, oh, with everyone, I have boundaries which are given to me by God. There's rules and responsibilities that are, you know, God-given. Very different than this approach, right? This is simple, but very self-centered. Because just that was just an example I wanted to share with you that came to my mind, that because I want to drive this point home that, you know, and I know that a number of you will be, you know, you're trying to find literature for your children to read, and it's good to always think, step back and see, okay, what is it that's being conveyed here? Okay, and then when should I start learning about these principles? Obviously, when we're upbringing children, obviously, when we're thinking about having children, you know, we need to be aware of these things before then. But even when getting married, right, even when getting married, because a lot of, you know, if you think about, like, where is it that sometimes marriages are tested greatly, it's when issues come up regarding children, right? And so, you know, I need to be thinking about this and from now making a plan. A lot of times, you know, you'll find young people and they'll say that, no, I'm not even interested in, sometimes you find that I'm not, it's just not on my radar at all, right? Okay, fine, right? You're being honest about, like, what you're feeling and not feeling, but one day it will be on your radar, right? One day, like, everyone does come to that realization pretty much that this is something that they want, and so what are you going to do at that time? Mashallah, these days, sometimes I find people, young people who are, like, actually the opposite. They're like, I'm really keen on having children. It's really amazing to me to see that, especially in our society, which is very individualistic and anti-family, that there's still this motivation, desire. But even before marriage, too, even before marriage, I think that, you know, these principles are things which, a lot of it has to do with just even how do I deal with my spouse, right? So just want to put that out there. We talked about this last time. And last point before we launch into our topic is that raising children is a joint effort, okay? One of the reasons why we read this ayah at the beginning of our class today, where it says that the child is saying, my Lord, have mercy on them just as they reared me when I was a small child. The Arabic for they reared me is Rabbaya. Rabbaya is the dual form, right? Meaning that two people did an action. Okay, not one person did the action. Rabbaya ni, they did it to me. So clearly the Quran lays out a role where both parents are involved in the Islamic upbringing of their children. And this particular passage from Risalat al-Hulquq of Imam Sajjad al-Islam, the scholars say that this applies to both the father and the mother. And, you know, you're responsible, you have responsibility, you have to help in good conduct and point him in the direction of the Lord. Now, if parents aren't on board, what's going to happen is that both of them are well-intentioned. They're like, no, I have my own style. Okay, we're going to, you know, and I hear this sometimes from parents. They're frustrated. They're like, you know, my For example, my husband is so easy and my wife is so strict and whatever. But the fact is that if it's different, no matter what it is, like let's say that both of you are right or both of you are wrong, whatever, right? If it's disjoint, we have to think about what are the effects on the soul and the mental health of the child. Okay, like if they're seeing from their primary caregiver this type of disjoint thing. It's very important to actively discuss, monitor, and evaluate the joint strategy, but behind closed doors, not in front of the children, not telling each other off, like really, you know, keep waiting, being careful about this. Now, let's say that you're struggling with this point, and, you know, my understanding is, generally speaking, this is one of the major pain points for different families. So, five suggestions. Number one is explain to your spouse that if we're not aligned, there are going to be mental, physical, and spiritual problems for our children, right? We care about our children. That's a care is given to us by God. It's inside of our heart. What can we do to keep our child from that pain, right? So, you know, you ask your spouse that. Second of all, like, okay, let's look at our own benefit. If our children are sound, they're healthy, they have like, you know, they have a solid upbringing, it's going to help us, right? It's thawab jari, right? It's going to be there for us in the future. Number three is that, you know, we've done so many changes for our children. We've changed our life completely, right? We've given up, sacrificed so much in terms of our own comforts and whatnot. Can't we do this as well, right? I mean, isn't this something that's really important for us to do? Number four is that, okay, you know, we need to do this together. I need your help, right? I want to change some things. I know that I'm doing things, for example, I get angry too much, or I'm very picky, or I don't have enough love, right? But I need your help, right? Let's work on this together. Let's have regular meetings about this, discuss, give open and honest feedback to each other. And finally, like, this could be your ticket to heaven, right? One child, right? We read the verse, the ayah at the beginning of last class, that because of their ishfaq, because they had this shafaqa, this, you know, mushfiq or mushfiqun for their children, they had a special care when it came to raising them, Allah put them in Jannah. Right? And people are like, why did you get here? Like, I got here because of my caring for my children. Right? So it's not a small thing, right? I mean, it's such an opportunity. Okay, I realize that we are running a little bit behind time, but inshallah, we're going to go to our topic for today. I'm not going to go too much past time, but we did start a little bit late. So the tarbiyah environment, parents' roles and responsibilities. I'm going to come back to this ayah again. We said that usually people look at it from this perspective of what do I have to do for my parents? I have to pray for them. Great. We need to do that. Second of all, we said what? That both parents need to be involved, right? Because of Rabbaya. Point number three, and this goes back to this point here, which is that, well, maybe this has come to you that, so Allah is saying that this is the dua that the children will make. My Lord, have mercy on them just as they reared me when I was a small child, okay? Now, there's a connection here between the mercy that the child wants Allah to show their parents and with the way that they raised them when they were children, right? Because there's the ka there. Like, it's like this, like that. So what happens if the parents did not raise them in a nice way? They did not raise them in a merciful way. What's going to happen? That means that the child is not going to be praying for them. So Ayatul Jawadi Amali, he says what? He says that in addition to commanding children to supplicate for their parents, it also makes parents aware that if they are seeking religious children from whose supplication they can continue to benefit, they should put effort into the spiritual upbringing of their children and should not suffice with providing food, drink, and matters related to physical upbringing. Okay? So that was point number three from this ayah. We're looking at the principles from the Islamic sources, right? And they're so rich, right? It's like, inshallah, as we ponder upon it, we're like, it's opening up doors for us, right? We're thinking, okay, this is where I need to be moving towards, right? What is my job? Rabbaya is from tarbiyah, okay? So what are the things, then let's go back to this thing, that from the Quranic perspective, what is my job when it comes to tarbiyah? Well, why do I even get married in the first place? Right. Obviously, there's physical needs, but is that the reason why God says that you're getting married to take care of your physical needs? Here, nothing wrong with that, of course. But what are these ayahs call our swords? He says here that وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ أَنْ خَلَقَ لَكُمْ مِنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ أَزْوَاجًا لِتَسْكُنُوا إِلَيْهَا وَجَعَلَ بَيْنَكُمْ وَدَةً وَرَحْمَةً إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَاتٍ لِقَوْمٍ يَتَفَكَّرُونَ. In this ayah, هو الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وجعل منها زوجها ليسكن إليها. Both of these ayahs talk about one of the primary purposes in establishing a family, in family building, which is what? The establishment of sukun. Okay, لِتَسْكُنُوا and لِيَسْكُنَ, sukun. So what is sukun? Okay, in the Quran, the word sukun is used in different ways. For example, when talking about nighttime, لِتَسْكُنُوا فِيهِ. Right, what happens at night? Everything that was previously in movement, it kind of settles down. Right? And so this is what's happening. One type of sukun is where somebody who is in movement, they settle down, they get back home, they chill, right? Oh, that's one type of sukun. The wind, when it's blowing, what happens is that the ships are moving, but when Allah wants, إِن يَشَأْ يُسْكِنَ الرِّيحِ, He causes the wind to find sukun, so it calms down, okay? But this type of sukun is physical. It's the opposite is like movement and a lot of activity. We know that in our homes, if you have a home which is like there's no activity, that's a home which has no life and there's no happiness. I mean, that's like a clinic, right? So what type of sukoon are we talking about here, right? This sukoon is not it is not the opposite. The commentators of the Quran, Mufassirin, they say it's not the opposite of haraka, but rather the opposite of idtirab, meaning stress, distress, and concern and worry. So a type of sukun and a peace and tranquility which deals with the hearts. So what I'm trying to seek in my family life, in my home, is this tranquility. Okay, this a type of peaceful state. So let's put this together. We're going to get to these two. So point number one, purpose of Islamic family building is to arrive at sukun, tranquility and comfort. Now, when Allah talks about the importance of sukun, or a synonym of it is sakina, He says what? He says, هُوَ الَّذِي أَنزَلَ السَّكِينَةَ فِي قُلُوبِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ لِيَزْدَادُوا إِيمَانًا مَعَ إِيمَانِهِمْ. Allah sends down tranquility, composure into the hearts of the faithful so that they can enhance their faith. So the role of sukun is it's a catalyst for somebody to grow closer to Allah. So this is the key, right? If I want to raise children who are believers, I want to raise them with a good religious upbringing, what is the key to that is to have a household of sukun, of tranquility. Now, I'm not just using words, these are not slogan words here. I'm going to get to the examples of common areas where we see that we lack this sukun. So I hope, inshallah, you can be patient until we get there. I'm going to skip this for now, but point number two here is that purpose of sukun is to arrive at higher levels of iman, iman meaning awareness plus practice, and achieve the purpose of our existence. Okay? Now, this then becomes the most important responsibility for parents regarding their home, is establish and maintain an environment such that all family members feel sukun. Okay? Now, that's interesting. Right? That really, it brings about, some things for us questioners, that am I doing that when it comes to my spouse? Am I doing that when it comes to my children? Right? If I approach my interactions with them from this perspective, I might make different decisions. So that's why it now becomes a key criteria. This is my, what is it called? KPC or KPR? KPI or OKR, right? My KPI. That how much sukun is in my home? Very simple. Or if I'm choosing between parenting strategies, time out, no time out, time in, whatever, this thing, that thing, what is it that's going to lead to more sukun? Okay. Now, example. Okay, an example, maskan in Arabic, interesting that the word for home comes from sukun. It's supposed to be a place of sukun. Very beautiful. There's this lady who says that when Imam Ridha alayhi salam was summoned to Khorasan, she says that I was gifted to him as a servant by Ma'amun al-Rashid. His house was simple. It did not have any of the colorful trappings of the palace. as I had been used to that lifestyle, because she was like a court lady, it was difficult for me to bear the simplicity. And then she talks about how she wanted to leave, whatever like that. The imam appointed a lady to train me. And at night, she would wake me to engage in night worship. I remember well that no one in his home had permission to yell with loud voices. The imam himself would speak to people calmly and with measure. It's very interesting. The type of home environment, like, think about, like, the being, like, if you get a chance to walk into the home of an imam, right, like, what would it be like? Well, here we have a report from somebody from the outside saying that these are the things that were, like, the outstanding, like, she's being quizzed on after she leaves the home, the hadith, like, what were the most outstanding things? So she's like, well, I remember he used to worship a lot, he used to pray a lot, he used to wear really nice scented perfume, and that it was quiet, it was, like, meaning, not quiet, it doesn't mean that, like, the kids weren't having fun, and, you know, the kids weren't getting their energy out. That's part of life, right? But especially the adults, right? They were calm, right? They were. You can derive from this. They're actively trying to establish this environment of sukoon, of tranquility, of calmness. Okay, if we can have sukoon in our home, then first of all, it's a type of healing atmosphere, right? Why? Because you know how it is, right? You take. Why is it that sometimes we want to go off to the ocean or we want to go, you know, out to wilderness? We just want to leave our worries behind and we want to go there. And when you go and you hear the ocean crashing around, sometimes, you know, it seems like the worries kind of seem less, right? Or you go to a graveyard, right? If you go to a graveyard, it's amazing how much sukoon you can find in a graveyard, you know? And a lot of times, like, the things which are really weighing us down, they suddenly take on a different perspective. Why? Because when you take, you know, a lot of stress and then you bring it into an environment of a lot of calm, right? It's like a ripple in the pond. It just kind of doesn't really make a big deal, right? It's kind of whatever. Okay, so when family members know that their home environment provides a sukoon, it's a way of healing for them. Number two, it can solve problems. That was number two, is it can solve problems. Large problems can suddenly become mitigated when taken to a peaceful environment. Number one is that every human being, it's the way God created us, is that we have a type of, almost like we're built with a type of like disturbance or stress or lack of calmness, which can only be taken care of and compensated for when we have that home environment, which has that sukoon, right? So this is the way we can think about, you know, our home environment. And the third point is that children who have sukoon will respond much better to religious teachings. Why? Because we saw in the ayah that that's a key for iman to be increased. So I need to have that environment at home which provides that. Now, what are some of the practical strategies for attaining sukoon? One of them is environment of respect. Okay, I have some particular comments about how especially spouses have a duty towards each other to have that respect as a precursor for doing tarbiyah of their children. And so we're going to talk about some of the specific strategies, inshallah, next time. Number two is spending quality time with the family where everyone feels understood and appreciated. Again, we're going to give some examples from hadith as well. Number three, leading a moderate life. One of the things which causes a lot of stress in people's lives is always having this hunger for what they don't have. And they're not content with their situation. There's no contentment. And everyone's like sitting around trying to like plan for what's the next big thing. What's the next big home upgrade, the next big home and purchase and whatever. Now, sometimes these things are necessary, right? Okay, but how can we also find happiness in what we have right now, the situation that we're in? And as parents, I should be asking myself right now that how many times a day do I actually feel grateful for what I have right now, right? Whether it be my children, the way they are, not the way that I want them to be, whether it be my home life, my possessions, my salary, whatever. Number four is having a tarbiyah approach towards TV screens and devices. One of the main things that disrupts that God-infused tranquility that should be coming to the homes is the presence of, content like coming from a TV screen. And number five is strengthening tawheed and wilayah. All five of these, inshallah, I'm hoping to be able to expand on in our next class. But at this point, I wanted to pause, basically stop my comments and see if anybody has any comments, feedback, questions. Inshallah, we can hear from you. And Brother Asad, if you don't mind monitoring the live stream, if there's any questions there. Yes. So the question is that there's a mother who has a child of 8 months, and the child tends to be fussy, cry a lot, and then so the mother ends up carrying the child a lot, but then she's being told by others that you're overdoing it, right? So what are some things that she could do to respond to it, right? Okay, so so let's look at this from a few different angles. One of them is that, you know, as a parent, right? I really need to be, first of all, be confident that if I'm taking the, I need to be confident in whatever approach I'm taking, right? I need to have a certain approach. So let's say I'm taking the approach of like, okay, I'm trying to do my best. I'm looking at the principles which are given to me from, you know, my teachings of my faith, right? I'm trying to supplement with, let's say, some of the examples from, you know, well-established practices. I'm taking advice from people who I trust, you know, and asking them, you know, what would you do in this circumstance, right? When I have this, I need to also have confidence, right? I can't just think that, okay, because let's say I'm a new mother or that everything I'm doing is wrong. No, I have to move forward with confidence, right? I have to have tawakkul, I have to have reliance on Allah, that I'm doing my best to find out what my responsibility is, and then He's there to help me. He's there to, even if I make some error, He'll point out that error to me, right? I can't be so concerned with pleasing everyone out there because I'm never going to please everyone. There's people out there who, When I get to the point where I decide to, like, you know, ask my child to put a hijab on, they'll be like, what are you doing? You're oppressing your child, right? So I'm never going to be able to please everyone. So that's one thing. Another thing to mention is that when it comes to the mother, a lot of times, you know, the mother has an instinct as to what her child really needs. And that can't just be ignored, right? Let's say this is something where, you know, she really feels, okay, I know that this my child needs me or not. I would never leave. Like, imagine there's an adult who's crying out for help, right? Would you just leave them? Say, no, deal with it yourself? Right? You don't do that type of thing, right? It's not humane, right? And here's a mother, instinct also kicking in here. Look, my child needs me, okay? Thirdly, is that the mother can also be thinking about this, that, okay, when my first instinct is to, like, pick up my child and, now, what am I learning about why is it that my child is crying, right? Like, are there triggers, right? Are certain things that I'm doing, right? For example, like, are there certain, let's say, foods that I'm eating that when the child nurses, then this is what's causing, like, the disturbance in the child? Is it something related to, like, stomach issues, right? Like, what is the issue here? Is it sleep related, right? Like, and the more we have this type of self-reflection about, like, the practice that we do, whatever practice we're doing, right, we, you know, it's like these insights come from, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's, you know, that thing, whatever it is, right? And it's good to seek out advice and say that, okay, let's say, for example, you know, we realize that, okay, she realizes that the child, let's say, it goes back to, like, issues related to, like, gut issues, right? Okay, well, let me get some advice about that thing. Or sleep issues, let me get some advice about that particular thing and then try to work on that. And also looking at some other approaches. Maybe, like, for example, if it's getting to the point where it's excessive, then I can look into, for example, let's say rocking my child or pushing them in, you know, some type of stroller, asking my husband to, you know, let's say, help out in these circumstances. Looking at different ways, because there are, you know, a lot of different ways of dealing with it. Holding the child is the most obvious, the easiest, but there could be others where the child finds that peace that they're looking for, but it's not necessarily through just holding the child. Now, we have, you know, mashallah, parents here, and they also might have some comments if they want to also add to that. Bismillah. Or go ahead, please. Bismillah. عليكم السلام. Okay, that's a great question, and inshallah, we're going to be approaching that through these points next time. I'll take that into account, inshallah. Go ahead. Yeah, sorry. One sec. Yeah. And then, okay. Oh, is it about that or about? It was on that topic. Oh, on that topic. Okay. So one second, brother. So, but go ahead, brother Mahdi.
Some parents that are doing that, even Muslims, like 7:30, they throw the child in the crib and they just walk away, and you know the child cries itself to sleep. But what's interesting about this is the question that I'm having for you is that, so you said that, you know, Allah Subhanahu wa Taala shows you the ways. The mother has these instincts. Now, a lot of times I feel like Allah Subhanahu wa Taala gives us the message through other people. So, is it possible that the people that are going up to her sister and saying, or the sister and saying, look, don't pick up your child as much, could that be, you know, a message that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is trying to give this person, right? If multiple people are coming and telling you, based on experience, if you keep picking up this child, as soon as it starts crying, you're giving this bad habit. Again, whether that's correct advice or not, my question is, when does the sister know that this advice is now correct and she should listen to it, you know what I mean, in comparison to, or they're just kind of telling her and she, you know, how does she deal with that?
Ahsan. Very good. So I'm just going to summarize the question. You know, he's saying that on one hand, we have the mother's instinct, we have this type of thing. And then on the other hand, we know that sometimes, you know, Allah sends us messages through different events that transpire around us. People might come to us, suggest something. What do we do? Okay. One thing I'll mention here is, as I said, that, you know, that mother would also have some people that she's in touch with, she's consulting with them. It could be her midwife, that she says she had a midwife. It could be some other people who are, she trusts, right? She feels that this person's a sound, right? In hadith, we're told specifically that when you go to somebody for advice on something and you're going with intention from getting help from God, God will place the answer on the tongue of that person for you. Okay, so oftentimes, like, let's say, you know, that she's hearing the different advice. So she has her mentor. She can be like, okay, I'm hearing this from people around me. What do you think, right? And maybe she has a few different, she goes and, you know, okay. So then the other thing is she's also reflecting. She's also, as I said, she's reflecting on her practice. So she's like, I have a certain path. And she's like, based on what they said, does that change? Because I came to my decision based on a certain reason, right? It's not like I just did it like that. I have a certain reason. It's because of this. Now that I heard this, does that affect my decision-making criteria? Like, or is it just like, no, I already thought about why, like, I can, like, for example, let's say my friend comes to me and says, that, no, I can be like, why, right? Why are you saying that? Is it because what? You know, is it because, for example, you're concerned about them forming the habit? Okay, well, my approach to that, for example, is that I will do things, but I will do it gradually. Right now, this child was in my womb, right? And now, initially, like, they're going to need a lot of support, and gradually, I'm going to work at easing that, you know, of creating that separation, but not in a way where they feel like they're being abandoned or anything. Okay, they're just being told to figure it out, like you said. Okay. Yes, brothers.
One point is just if you can repeat the questions.
Which, I think this time I did repeat all the questions. Yeah, okay.
I put the question also.
Oh, Hassan, thank you. Next time, inshallah. Okay, inshallah, I'll note that down for something to be looked into at a future session, inshallah.
So there's one more. It's the last one, sibling rivalry often becomes worse when there is already tension. It often makes things worse because it is hard to handle. Advice to mitigate that while also trying to fix the home environment.
So advice, one point was advice for when grandparents are at home, and then the other one was advice for when you have sibling rivalry and what to do about sibling rivalry, and that, you know, and then that can make things worse. So these are really good topics, and I think it would be very beneficial for us to look into, you know, what are some of the strategies that, you know, let's say our scholars who are working in this area that they've given for this, and they have. But these type of topics, I'm thinking for semester two, because we're going through like some of the more fundamental principles. If we get into some of the details, then it'll be like, well, what if this, what if that type of thing. I think there was one person raising their hand there, and then we'll get to that, and inshallah, we'll end up for today. I don't know which one of the brothers was it. Was it Mohammed? Go ahead, please. That's an amazing question. Thank you so much. So, he, you know, brother says that, okay, when you get married and then you have kids, a lot of times, like, you're going from, like, living a very non-stressed life to, be, you know, stress, and then even more stress, and then more stress, and it's like two kids, and then three kids, and it's like, oh my God, what's happening, right? So where's the sukoon in that, right? So let's go to that tense moment. It's the middle of the night, you know, you haven't slept, and child's not going to fall asleep, and you have a big work meeting tomorrow, and everything like that, right? Now, at that time, like, let's say, you know, you're trying to help, right? Let's say you're trying to help your wife, right? What does she need from you most at that time, right? She needs you to give her that sukoon, right? It's okay. We're in the presence of Allah. Everything's going to be okay. Give her that smile. Give her that encouragement. Right, when the child is like acting up, doing that tantrum, whatever it is, right, what do they need to see from you? Right, they need to see that sukoon. Right, so this is the thing, like that when all these it's almost like, you know, and we make mistakes all the time, right? And, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, as I'm saying these things, I'm like, you know, لِمَ تَقُولُونَ مَا لَا تَفْعَلُونَ, right? Like, why are you saying things that, you know? So we make mistakes, right? But then, like, God gives us another chance, another chance, another chance, another chance, like, you know, all these chances, and it's like, okay, like, all these are opportunities for you to, like, you know, work on, you know, that internal one, make it spread, make it exude, make it be like the dominant quality of your family, that we have that thing, like we have this sort of, and it's very much tied to, you know, taqwa, right? Which it comes, it's like this thing where we're holding ourselves in a way where, you know, because of our connection with Allah, we have that sukoon, right? We know that we're not alone in this, right? We're you know, we have like this all-powerful, all-knowing, all-merciful. He's showing us his mercy even now too. Even now he's still Rahman. And even now he's still Rahim. Even though this, you know, it seems like a bala, he's Rahman, Rahim in that bala as well too. Right? So inshallah, I think we'll end there. Let's recite salawat, please.